Planet Earth spins in the inky blackness of space. Rays of light are projected from its surface. In chunky letters encircling the globe, Universal. Fluffy white clouds drift in a blue sky. In a black and grey box superimposed over the image, Studio Canal, the image fades to black. Concentric circles spin within each other like a gyroscope. Working title. White letters on a black background. Universal Pictures, Studio Canal. And working title films present an Endymion Films production in association with WTA. A Gregor Jordan film. Heath Ledger. A silhouetted figure dives fully clothed into murky water. Ned Kelly. The figure, a fresh-faced boy, surfaces for air, then dives down into the shadows. Orlando Bloom. He kicks his legs and reaches out into the water below him. Naomi Watts. A chubby boy holds his breath and struggles with the strap of his satchel as he sinks like a stone into the shadowy depths. The fresh-faced boy grabs him by the scruff of the neck and kicks his legs, dragging the chubby boy to the surface. Joel Edgerton, Lawrence Kinlan, Philip Barantini, Kerry Condon, Chris McQuaid and Geoffrey Rush. An eagle soars over Rocky Mountains. Australia, 1871.
I was the hero of Hughes Creek.
The eagle rides the wind. Trees dot the sloping, sun-drenched hills.
I can still see the glint of my dad's eye as he looked down at me, his hand on my shoulder.
The mountainous terrain stretches all the way to the azure horizon. The leaves of a tree sway in a gentle breeze. Music by Klaus Badelt. A flock of white birds takes off from a tree.
And what did he call me that day? What did Dar call me?
A young man lies on his back by the smoking remains of a campfire.
That's right. He called me Sunshine.
The man, Ned Kelly, wakes and sits upright. His shaggy brown hair looks unwashed. He stares over at a white horse which is grazing by nearby trees. Ned furrows his brow and looks around. The horse wears a saddle and a bridle. It looks at Ned as he saunters over to it.
You're a pretty girl.
He strokes its nose.
Hey, you're a wild rice horse, ain't you? I know who you are. It's all right. I'll look after you.
He kisses the animal on the nose. Ned rides the galloping horse through open grassland which is dotted with trees. Ned canters up to a collection of ramshackle wooden buildings. A girl sits behind him astride the horse, her arms wrapped around his waist. A white-bearded man sits on a wooden chair on his porch.
Fancy-looking horse you got there, Ned. You're cutting the flush, all right.
A bearded policeman approaches.
Ah, great.
You're Ned Kelly, aren't you? Red Kelly's boy.
Get down, Jane.
Pretty, black-haired Jane dismounts.
Fine animal you got there. Distinctive, wouldn't you say?
She's wild, right?
That's a postmaster's mare.
No, it isn't. It's wild, right? He lost her when she bolted into the bushes.
You're a liar, Kelly.
No, I'm not. Like, I found her this morning grazing.
She reported stolen.
You're stolen me, aren't you?
Which makes you a horse?
Get your hands off me.
Under arrest.
The officer pulls Ned from the horse, which bolts. Ned leaps to his feet.
Stand, Kelly, or I swear to God I'll shoot you down.
Hey, I was only going after the horse.
You're trying to escape, you blackguard. You're just as thick as your bloody father.
The officer fires his pistol, narrowly missing Ned. Ned snatches the gun.
Christ, now what are you trying to do? I'd have turned your hide for that.
Strike an officer in your bloody sweet front.
Strike you down to the ground. Eh? No blow, subject, Constable Hall.
Help me, someone.
Oh, help him. Help Constable Hall. Poor Constable Hall. He's such a fucking man.
Kill me, the rat. Help me, someone.
Stand clear. God, put me down. Try to shoot me, for Christ's sake. Hurry.
Two other officers restrain Ned and the constable hits him in the face.
Is that the best you can do, you bloody coward?
Constable Hall hits him again. Blood trickles down his face.
Go on, I can take it.
Hey, it's enough!
One of the other constables pushes Hall away and turns to inspect Ned, who sways and sinks backwards. A door within another larger wrought iron door opens and Ned steps out onto a street. He's hard-faced and gaunt. His hair is closely cropped. Two men in their 20s, Aaron Sherritt and Joe Byrne, stand nearby watching. Out in the country, the three of them stand by a dirt road.
Hello! Hello there! I show and help me! Come on, come on! We really like the body, please! Please now! Oh, come on, give us a ride, you bastard!
Christ, it's muddy enough to bugger, Doc.
So, where'd you go after Beechworth?
Mayday Hills on a road gang.
Ah, you see Sean Galler, I heard he was up there.
Yeah, I saw him for a while.
A horse-drawn carriage approaches.
Hey. Yeah. I think that's old man Wicks, and what's his daughter called?
Sarah.
Sarah, that's right. She's a picture. Oh, we could be in luck, boys.
Aaron takes off his hat and smooths back his hair.
Mr. Wicks! Good morning. Mr. Wicks, I don't know if you remember me. I'm Aaron Sheriff, Mr. Wicks. If you could just hold up for one moment.
If anyone could persuade an old man to share his daughter with three larrikins like us, it'll be Aaron.
Tells me, Mar. What?
The cops have been giving her a hard time, Ned. Someone goes missing, a bullock or anything, they come round the middle of the night, tear the place apart, scaring the kiddies and all, you know.
Joe shakes his head.
She's had it hard.
Come on, lads, jump up!
Oh, will you look at that.
What did I tell you?
Joe and Ned run over to the carriage.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Wicks.
Thank you, Mr. Wicks.
They sit squashed up in the back of the carriage. Dusk. By the modest Kelly house, a young man, Steve Hart, boots a football to 20-something Dan Kelly. He looks up to see Joe, Aaron and Ned approaching on the horizon. Holding a baby, Ma Kelly joins her teenage daughter Grace at the door and squints.
It's Ned.
Neddy!
Inside, a pot bubbles away over an open fire.
Mummy, I named Thompson's Kookaburra.
What did you name him, darling?
Beefy, because he likes beef.
Well, that's a fine little name for a Kookaburra, Grace.
Who's the proud father, Ma?
Sure, don't even ask. It's a long time gone, that's all there is to it.
A stinking proddy.
He was a Yank. George the Baker. We married Ned, right and proper.
Well, that's grand.
Dan's footfall hits the dinner table.
Jesus Christ, will you stop your messing? I'm sick of the pair of you.
Now you give your mother some respect or I'll give you a hiding, both of you, do you hear me? And who are you anyways?
Steve Hart.
Well, seeing as though the two of you are so full of beans, you can both get off your asses and help me fix up this place. You haven't done a minute's work to help your mother, have you?
Come on, everyone. Sit down now.
What kind of stew is it?
Wombat. A wombat's a marsupial and it lives in a hole.
I know, darling. I put one in the stew.
The family sit down at the dinner table. Ma sits down, still cradling the baby.
Ned, would you like to see the grease?
Right.
They cross themselves and put their hands together in prayer.
Dear Lord, thank you for looking after me, Mother, me, Sister Grace, me, Sister Kate, and me, Brother Dan. Thank you, Lord, for a beautiful baby Ellen. And for this wonderful stew made out of wombat.
Amen.
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 Amen. Amen.
They cross themselves and reach for the food. Night. Most of the family sleep on the floor under blankets. Ned lies awake, staring at the ceiling. He turns his head and exchanges a lingering look with Dan, who lies in a bed in one corner of the room. Raven-haired Dan closes his eyes. Ned stares pensively at the ceiling. Ned and Joe cut through a felled tree trunk with a long saw. They pass the saw back and forth between them as they cut through the mighty tree trunk.
It's not easy for an Irishman in Queen Victoria's colony to walk the straight and narrow.
Ned makes a fence.
But I towed the line, despite all temptations.
He watches attractive Julia Cook get into an elegant carriage. Ned fist fights in front of a crowd.
With me fighting with me fists for money.
Police constables watch as a bloodied Ned fights with burly mustachioed Wild Wright.
After all, I did 3 years for that stolen horse. Wild Wright only got 18 months. You think I was going to let that one slide?
Ned pummels Wright with a series of heavy blows. Wright collapses in a bloody heap and falls unconscious.
Are you there, Ned, the winner?
Aaron collects money in a hat. Men help a muddy, punch-drunk Wright to his feet.
Oh, we swear.
Of course we are, you mad bugger. Come in.
Thank Christ for that.
Cows are driven into a wooden pen by men on horses. Ned and Dan close the pen.
Could it be possible that the Kellys were finally getting ahead? And that I could actually better myself?
Mottled grey horses trot around in the pen with the cattle. Ned leads a horse by its bridle. Blonde-haired 30-something Julia Cook stands beside the rear of a horse.
Steady.
She looks at Ned.
Excuse me. You there. Would you mind coming and holding my horse's thing?
All right.
He leaps up onto a fence, penning in the horse.
Now what thing are you talking about, ma'am?
She sighs.
Are you going to help me or not?
He climbs over the fence.
I've been riding him pretty hard the last 2 days. Poor thing's been holding on since Saturday. His ladder's paralysed with the colic.
Good God.
You got that?
Right, yeah. Good.
Just hold it there.
Ned laughs and slips his hand under the horse's belly.
Keep still. Glad that's not me, Christ.
Steady.
Julia pushes a long tube inside the horse, and its urine starts to flow.
All right. Watch your boots, boys.
They back away from the horse.
It looks like you've done this kind of thing before.
Only on horses.
Thank God for that.
He falters. She smiles and looks away.
My name's Ned Kelly. Pleased to meet you.
Hello, Ned.
Ned grins as they shake hands. Ned, Julia, and her mustachioed husband, Richard, watch from outside the pen as a man is thrown from a horse. The man runs.
Watch out, lads! Here he goes again!
The horse rears up on its hind legs. Leaning against the fence, Richard sighs.
Horse is too wild. It can't be broken. Waste of damn money. Fetch my rifle, please.
What? You can't just shoot a horse because it's wild.
What else can we do? We can't keep it here.
Why don't you set it free, then?
I could break that horse free if you like.
Ned walks over to Richard and Julia.
I've broken horses before. You can ask around. I'd like to give it a try, at least.
A man hands Richard a rifle. Richard eyeballs Ned.
We know there's not much point. Horse is bad.
Richard takes aim and shoots the horse dead. Richard looks at Ned and walks away. Ned shares a look with a crestfallen Julia, who glances about awkwardly, then returns Ned's gaze. His eyes follow her as she walks away. A spider scuttles along its web. Ants scurry about industrially amidst the dirt and twigs. Prickly thistles and the leaves of tall trees sway in a light breeze. Ned's clothes are tattered and his scruffy hair lank. As he works, he watches Julia. Wearing her Sunday best, She sits in the horse-drawn carriage opposite her two children. Richard slips as he climbs into the carriage. A bearded man comes to his assistance as he hops down onto the ground. The man rests a hand on his shoulder, but Richard shrugs him off sharply and leans on the carriage with his back to the man. Julia exchanges a look with Ned, and a fleeting smile plays on her lips. Richard successfully boards the carriage. Joe has his arm round a pretty blonde in a busy pub filled with Chinese men. One of the Chinese men says, "You know, the Chinese say you should have only one true love in your entire life. Otherwise, you're no better than a mangy dog or a loose woman." In Chinese, Joe replies, "Good thing I'm not Chinese."
What did he say?
He said, "What a lucky fella I am to be with such a beauty as you."
Too lucky, if you ask me.
A comely brunette sits in Aaron's lap. Kate Kelly, Dan and Steve are talking at a table. Bearded with sandy blonde hair, Constable Fitzpatrick watches them intently. Kate laughs and throws her head back. Fitzpatrick watches her. She rises from her seat and squeezes out past Aaron and Joe's table. She walks past a dancing couple to get to the bar. Fitzpatrick steps back to observe her. He knocks back the remains of his drink and puts his glass down, then strolls over to her. 20-something Kate is slim with long brown hair. She doesn't notice him standing beside her.
Oh, hello, Kate. Didn't see you there.
Fancy seeing you here.
I just had a swift pint after work. It's not like I'm a regular or anything. Managed to relax after a hard day's work.
Sure, what would you know about a hard day's work? Sleeping and drinking and beating up yellow fellas is all you ever seem to do.
Oh, that's not fair now. I'm only doing my job. I get along with everybody. Everybody gets along with me.
Ned canters over to a horse tied up outside the pub and dismounts.
Can I buy you a drink, Kate?
No, thank you. I have money.
I just want to buy you a drink.
Well, I said I don't want one. You're starting to get me nerves now.
I think you're too good for me. Is that it? Who do you think you are, huh?
Mm-hmm. They call me Bloody Arm. They're hurting me.
Let go of her arm, you.
I'm just being friendly, Ned. Just offering the young lady a drink.
Well, she doesn't want one from the likes of you.
There's a problem there, Fitzpatrick.
Big bearded Constable Lonigan.
No. There's no problem here, Constable.
Sorry, Foy. Upset you, Kate.
Aaron.
Right. This one's a request from Ned Kelly.
Aaron grabs a banjo and joins a band on stage.
Follow me, boys. One, two.
Fitzpatrick slinks over to Lonigan and two other constables. They watch as Ned dances gleefully with Kate.
The nerve of the bloody knacker, look at him. Acts as if he owns the place.
Dan, come here and dance with your sister. Come on.
Ned claps enthusiastically.
That fella needs taken in a peg or two, that's for sure.
Dan and Kate dance. Ned shoots the constables a cheeky look as he claps along to the music. Lonigan narrows his eyes and sips his pint. Dan sprints across the bush with a dog. Inside the Kelly's humble cabin, Kate plaits her hair. Grace hands Ned a pot which he puts on the fire. Dan bursts through the door.
Ned, the horses are gone.
What?
Two birds are perched on a tree branch, looking out over the police station. Joe, Dan, Aaron, Ned and three other men watch from a distance as the constables mill about outside their cabin. They have the Kelly's horses in an enclosure. Ned's gang are hard-faced.
The biggest thieves and liars the sun ever shone on. The Victorian police.
Ned glowers at the oblivious police officers as they loiter on their front porch.
Well, I'm telling you something now, boys. I'm not going to let these bloody maggots put one over on me.
Night. One of Ned's gang, Steve Hart, creeps up to Constable Fitzpatrick, who's asleep in a chair on the darkened station porch. Steve beckons four of the gang. They open a gate and rush over to the horses. Aaron and Ned bridle a horse each as Dan unties two horses' reins from a wooden fence. Ned unties the horse he's bridled and leads it away from the fence. Steve peers down at the sleeping constable. As Dan and Ned lead the horses out of the enclosure, Steve reaches for a liquor bottle in the sleeping constable's hand. He lifts it free of the constable's grasp, then nods gratefully, takes a swig and runs off. They cross the bush on the horses.
To change your horse's brand is easy. Easier than you'd think.
They lead a long procession of stolen horses.
You just pluck the little hairs and you prick the skin with iodine. A C or an O can become a Q. Q for Quinn. Me mother's maiden name.
Ned sells the horses to a white-bearded old man and splits the cash with his gang. At the Kellys, young pretty Grace sketches a charcoal portrait of Steve, who sits at the table opposite Dan. Ma sits by the fire sewing.
You said at this hour of the night.
Constable Fitzpatrick canters up outside their cabin. Joe and Dan step out of the cabin and look up at him.
Dan? Is Kate in?
Yes, she is.
Well, will you mind telling her I'd like a word, please? In private, like.
No, I won't. She wants nothing to do with you, you know that full well.
Yeah, well, I'd like to hear that from her, if you don't mind.
Fitzpatrick, you've already heard that from her many's the time. Will you do yourself a favour? Take a ride home.
You think you're so smart, bird.
Yeah.
I have a warrant for you.
You've no warrant, you fool.
It was you, Kelly, stole them horses. I know it was, and I have a warrant for you. Ned, no. I have warrants for the both of you.
I don't suppose I could see them warrants, could I?
Fitzpatrick takes a pistol from a holster on his belt and glances at it with a bitter smile.
There's your warrants. There's your warrants.
Ned tidies up in a darkened stable. He puts a saddle on a low shelf as Julia enters. She glances at the horses, then sees Ned.
Oh, hello. I just came down to find my riding jacket. I thought I left it here somewhere.
She looks around the stable.
I haven't seen it.
I was sure it was here.
Well, if I find it, I'll be sure to bring it up to the house for you.
All right, then.
Great. You're from England?
Yes. Sorry, actually. You're Irish.
Yeah, my dad was from Tipperary, but I was born here. I've never been to Ireland.
I came over when I was 17. Richard acquired the land through his family, and...
Well, my dad had to go to all the trouble of stealing a sheep to get the trip over here.
He got a free fare, then. He was lucky.
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick sits in the Kelly's cabin with his gun in front of him on the table. He strokes it and stares unblinkingly at Kate, who crosses to a chest of drawers and stands with her back to him.
How are you tonight?
Fine. Till you showed up.
She glares at him and crosses the room.
Drink, boys.
Steve and Dan glower at him as he unscrews the cap from a small liquor bottle.
Steve?
Stop drinking coppers.
There's no need for that.
Fitzpatrick swigs his booze. In the stable.
So I'm leaving here tomorrow. The work here for me is finished now.
Yes, I know.
So I won't be seeing you anymore.
Julia's smile fades and she looks away.
You sure you don't have a better look for that riding jacket of yours?
She stares at him warily and he lowers his gaze. Julia shakes her head.
No, I must have left it in the house somewhere.
She smiles and cocks her head.
Well, it was nice to have met you.
She gazes at him doe-eyed. Her long golden curls tumble over the shoulders of her purple dress. They shake hands. The handshake lingers. Ned strokes the back of her hand with his thumb. Julia slowly meets his gaze.
You should go.
She gazes longingly at Ned, who caresses her hand.
I think you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
Julia stares into his eyes. Grace sits beside Ma.
You don't have any warrants at all, do you?
Oh, I do, Mrs. Kelly. I do.
I don't believe this. You just playing kick or what?
Come on, Kate. I'm just having a bit of fun, you know?
Fitzpatrick grabs Kate by the waist. Dan clubs him and grabs the gun.
Now, let's see those bloody warrants.
Dan holds Fitzpatrick at gunpoint. Ned and Julia stand close to one another, gazing into each other's eyes. They brush noses and share a slow, lingering kiss. Ned caresses her neck and her cheeks as they kiss with slowly mounting passion. Their lips part and their eyes meet. They kiss hungrily and tug feverishly at each other's clothes. Joe throws Fitzpatrick out of the Kelly's cabin. Fitzpatrick tumbles to the floor. There's blood on his hand.
I split my head open! You bastards!
It's your hand, you bloody agents!
Hey, Fitzpatrick! Bottom rung on top there, huh?
Shoot him!
Dump Dan.
Give him back his bloody gun!
Dan shoots the ground at Fitzpatrick's feet, forcing him to retreat towards his horse.
Go on, get!
Dan tosses him the gun.
I'll be back for you, you bastards.
The gang glare at Fitzpatrick as he mounts his horse and gallops off. Dan stares after him, then turns and follows the others back to the house. Julia sits on a waist-high bench in the stable. Ned stands between her thighs, slowly kissing her forehead. Her dress is pulled down to reveal a skimpy red vest top. She caresses his chest over his shirt, then begins to do up her top. At the Kellys, Kate stands with her arms crossed.
Can you believe the brass neck on Daddy Aegis?
Trying to be all friendly with a grog.
Yeah, he soon sobered up when you pointed the gun at him. See his face?
I'm glad you think this is all very funny.
Seated, Joe looks up as Ned enters.
Where have you been?
Never mind where I've been.
Ned hangs up his jacket and turns to the others. His face drops.
What's happened?
Fitzpatrick couldn't hold his brandy and lemonade.
What are you talking about?
We had a fight with Fitzpatrick.
A fight? Why?
He said he had warrants for me and you.
What warrants?
Horse stealing, but it was a load of shite, Ned.
Whether it was or wasn't, it's trouble now either way.
Ash, you can't take that fella seriously.
How can you stand there and act like this is one big joke? After all the trouble we've had with coppers in this family.
Ned hangs his head pensively. Joe rises from his seat.
What are you thinking, Joe?
I'm thinking you and Dan ought to clear out of here for a day or two. Just to be safe. God willing, it'll all blow over.
Ned chews a long piece of grass. He nods gravely. Fitzpatrick rides back into town on his horse. He stops outside the police station, then sways drunkenly and dismounts. Lonigan sits smoking on the porch with another officer.
What the hell happened to you?
Fitzpatrick glances down at his bloodied hand.
Ned Kelly shot me.
Lonigan stands sharply.
He what?
Officers trash the Kelly's home.
Take your rotten hands off me, you bastard!
Get off her! You're under arrest! No. I'm taking you to the cells!
You're being bastards!
Aaron and Kate ride into a gold mining camp.
Ned!
Ned! Ned squats by a fire with Dan, Joe, and a Chinese man who remains on his haunches as the others stand. Kate scrambles up the rocks to approach them.
Ned! Jesus, Ned, they've arrested Ma!
They what?
Yeah, they've taken her to the cells. Charged with attempted murder.
Attempted murder?
And Fitzpatrick saying you took a shot at him.
I wasn't even there!
We know that. But it's your word against his.
Take the word of a drunken liar and arrest an innocent woman! Is that right? I won't take this injustice! I'm gonna kill him! I swear I'll scatter his blood and brains like rain!
He grabs a pistol.
Stand aside, Ned!
Make this worse for Ma!
Stop it, Ned!
Joe wrestles the gun from Ned's grasp. Ned rides up to the Cook household. Julia sits in the garden with her two children and a Chinese maid. She rises sharply with a look of concern.
Take the children inside, please.
The maid leads the children away as Ned dismounts. Julia rubs her hands together and glances nervously towards the house. Ned approaches her.
What are you doing here?
arrested me, Mar.
What for?
A copper says I tried to kill him.
Why?
Yeah, because he's a bastard liar like all coppers, that's why.
He holds his horse by its bridle.
The thing is, I wasn't even there.
He looks her in the eye.
I was here with you.
Julia gawps.
Well, you could tell the truth. Show the swine up for the drunken liar he is. And then they'd have to release me, Mar.
That's impossible. I couldn't. Do you realise what that would mean?
Yes.
Staring into his eyes, she opens her mouth to speak, but falters.
I can't. I'd be disgraced.
Julia looks at him apologetically.
You'd take away my children.
Ned stares at her blankly. She looks at him with eyes that plead forgiveness. He briefly lowers his eyes, then shakes his head.
Sorry, dear. I understand.
He turns to mount his horse.
Ned.
Come here.
He leaps up onto the saddle and tugs at the reins, turning the horse around.
Right.
Julia's eyes follow him as he gallops off. A constable leads Mar into a dark, narrow prison cell and closes the door behind her. Ned sits astride his horse in the pale blue light of dusk. He closes his eyes and strokes the back of his horse's neck, then stares pensively into space. Ned and Joe stand in a forest firing their pistols at a chalk drawing of a policeman they've scrawled on a tree. An aborigine in an animal skin cloak stops nearby to watch them. Ned aims his pistol at the man, then lowers it and stares at him thoughtfully. A party of eight or so police officers rides through the forest on horseback.
I made them an offer at the outset. Charge me and let me mother go. The answer came back. We don't bargain with outlaws. We'll catch you anyway.
A police officer in a black tank top aims a rifle at a tropical bird in mid-flight. Ned's with Dan. They look up. Joe rises from a squatting position by a campfire. Steve joins him. Night. Ned and Dan spy on the police as they set up camp.
Do you see those stretchers? You know what they're for? The bastards ain't planning on taking prisoners, that's for sure.
Joe squats down beside Ned in the long grass.
There's another party down past the neck at Bullet Creek. Four of them. They've hemmed us in on either side, whether they know it or not.
They'll come back at dawn. Hold up these two, take their guns and horses. At least then we'll have a chance of making a run for it. Right.
Day. Two bright, multicoloured birds perch on a tree branch. Thin grey smoke rises from the police officer's dying campfire. Two officers mill about outside a tent. Armed with pistols, Joe and Ned advance stealthily towards the camp. They stop, squatting low in the tall undergrowth. Joe cocks his gun. Ned signals to Dan and Steve. They peer over at him from their hiding place in the tall grass. Ned raises his index finger. Dan and Steve turn their eyes back to the camp. Ned watches with intense concentration as an officer leads a brown horse towards them. Wide-eyed, Steve and Dan look at Ned. He signals for them to wait. His eyes are on a second officer. The officer lays down his rifle. Ned waits for the officer to amble away from his gun, then gives his gang the signal to advance. They leap from the undergrowth with their guns drawn.
Drop your arms!
Lonigan draws his pistol and fires at Ned. He misses. Ned puts a bullet through Lonigan's left eye. Ned lowers his pistol and the gang strolls into the camp. Joe points his gun at the remaining officer, who has his hands in the air. Steve grabs a rifle resting against a felled tree and trains it on the officer. Lonigan lies face down in the dirt. Ned turns him over.
Why is that Lonigan, Ned?
Dan and Ned stand over him.
You've killed Lonigan.
Bedraggled and bearded, Ned looms over Lonigan's dead body. He stares at it remorselessly. McIntyre, the officer who shot the bird, butters bread.
Do you want marmalade, Ned?
Ned stares at the ground. He cradles a gun in the crook of his arm with the barrel pointing at the sky. McIntyre shifts uncomfortably in his seat and looks at Ned.
Are you going to kill me or what?
Joe reads a letter. He glances over at Ned.
I leave the force. First thing tomorrow morning, I swear it on me mother's life, Ned.
Ned eyeballs him, then lowers his gaze. Dan sees two officers approaching on horseback.
Ned.
Ned looks over at them.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Do as I said, I don't want to get shot.
The gang retreat to various hiding places. Joe squats in the opening of a tent. Steve's behind the trunk of a felled tree. McIntyre rises from his wooden stool and goes over to greet the approaching officers. They wear sergeant's uniforms.
Sergeant, you'd better surrender. You're surrounded.
The sergeants share a look.
Give it into the whiskey again, you old sod. Get some toast on there, Lonigan.
Lonigan's gone and you told me next if you don't get off them damn horses.
A sergeant fires at Ned but misses. Ned returns fire and McIntyre ducks. Ned shoots the sergeant off his horse. The other sergeant fires from behind his horse. Joe fires his pistol and the horse bolts. The sergeant runs for cover. McIntyre mounts a horse and gallops off. Joe fires at him, but McIntyre escapes over the brow of the hill. The sergeant legs it. Ned leaps over a felled tree and gives chase. Ned shoots the fleeing sergeant, who falls to the ground, but stumbles to his feet and runs again.
Give us up, Ned! It's over!
Ned hares after the sergeant.
You stop running! I won't shoot you, I swear!
The sergeant turns and fires. Ned shoots him down. Emerging from a cloud of gun smoke, Ned sprints over to the sergeant. Ned wipes his brow. The sergeant writhes on the ground.
Now why didn't you surrender? I wouldn't have shot you.
I can't breathe.
No.
I can't breathe.
Right, right, right. Listen.
Ned takes off his own jacket.
It's okay. Oh,
look. I can't breathe.
One minute. It's all right.
Ned puts the rolled-up jacket under the sergeant's head like a pillow. Blood pours from a wound on the sergeant's chest.
Like, why'd you have to run? I wouldn't have shot you! Just drink!
I don't die no, like no. this!
I'm sorry I shot you!
I don't
I'm sorry I shot
get
you!
Get away from the children! No. What are they going to do without me? What are they going to do without me? No!
Look at me!
Ned puts a bullet through the sergeant's chest. Leaning on the corpse's chest, Ned discards his pistol and sways on his haunches. He casts a long, lingering look at the dead sergeant's pallid face, then closes the corpse's eyes with his fingers. Ned hangs his head and looks at the blood on his hands. He takes a silver pocket watch from the sergeant's jacket. Ned catches his breath and slowly flips the watch open. The watch reads 2:25. His bloodied hands tremble as he closes them around the pocket watch.
I don't know why I took his watch. It was something to do with him not needing it.
Two tropical birds peck at the ground beside the sergeant's dead body.
Later I thought about sending it to his family. But by then the papers had me down as some sort of monster.
A heavy rain falls on the birds and animals of the forest.
So I thought, no point now.
An eagle shakes its wet head.
I'm damned anyway.
The torrential rain beats against Mar's prison cell window. A guard lets Kate in. She and her mother embrace. The guard shuts them in.
Is it true what they've been saying about the three coppers?
Yeah, it's true.
God.
Ma sinks onto her bed.
Well, it was a fair fight, Ma. Better them than Ned.
Ma's eyes rove.
They'll kill him now. They'll kill him for sure.
Kate stares at her. Joe and the gang trot up to Aaron's hut with their guns drawn. Aaron emerges in the doorway in his long johns. His torso is wrapped in a blanket. He grabs a document and waves it above his head as Joe strides towards him. He walks towards Joe.
Don't shoot, lad. I'm unarmed. Man, put that away. There aren't any troopers.
Joe sticks the pistol down the front of his trousers and gives Aaron a hug.
You're bloody chirpy for the sound of mine.
Hey, gotta keep your voice down. Like a visitor.
Oh.
Mary Hegarty.
Mary Hegarty?
Hmm?
Jesus, she can be only 13.
Well, I'm not superstitious. Well, 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 well. I've never met a man whose lives are worth £2,000 before. Especially not Irish. Huh?
£2,000?
Yeah.
Is that what it's up to? Sure, my cock alone's worth more than that.
Well, I could do with the money myself. I'd build a shed out the back, buy a few horses. In fact, I could buy half a beach worth with all that.
It's very funny, Aaron.
Joe wants to see you.
Dan and Steve watch as Joe takes the document from Ned and reads it.
They've recalled Parliament. Passed something called the Felons Apprehension Act. It means we're listed as outlaws. We can be shot on sight by anyone who chooses.
Joe looks at Ned. Aaron sits on a tree trunk. He brings an axe down in the mud. Aaron stares at them.
They said I'd lost what it meant to be human. Maybe never had it in the first place. But wasn't this about protecting the ones I loved? The ones who gave me food and shelter, even the clothes on my back.
The gang ride into town in broad daylight.
And therefore, wasn't it now a war?
Dan, Steve, Joe and Ned ride side by side.
Dan. You see that wooden gate? Around the back there is their living quarters. If anyone's there, you keep them there.
Joe and Ned dismount and tie up their horses outside a bank. Joe and Ned creep into the empty bank with their guns drawn. They peer around the place. A couple of books and a pen lie on the wide reception desk, but there's nobody manning it. A pendulum swings back and forth from a wall-mounted clock. Ned looks at Joe, then at a bell on the reception desk. He rings it. They hide their guns behind their backs as a besuited and bespectacled banker emerges. He strolls over to the reception desk.
Can I help you?
Yes, you can. My name's Edward Kelly.
His mates call him Ned.
Ned Kelly? I'm sure I've heard that name somewhere. I'm sure you have, sir.
Armed, Dan and Steve burst in on the banker's family.
Stay where you are.
What do you think you're doing? Who are you?
The family are dressed in black.
Going to a funeral, eh? You better do as I say, it'll be your own.
To a prim-looking girl.
Fanny Shaw, what are you doing here?
I work here.
Jeez, I can't believe it.
What are you doing here, Steve?
We're robbing the bank. Me and Fanny used to go to school together.
Ned and Joe enter with the banker. Ned slings Steve a bag of money.
Steve. Hello, kiddies.
The banker's wife mouths, "Is that Ned?" to the banker.
You're Ned Kelly.
That's right.
What are you going to do with us?
Well, you're coming with us to Faithful's Creek. We can't leave anyone behind to raise the alarm now, can we?
Mr. Kelly, we are supposed to be attending a funeral today. As you can see, I'm dressed in morning wear.
Ned eyes her.
Obviously unsuitable for a woman travelling in the countryside, hostage or no, even a blackguard like yourself.
Susan, I do apologise for my wife's behaviour.
There is no need to apologise on my account, Charles. The man is wearing a magenta cravat, for God's sake.
Jo smirks.
I have an outfit just arrived from Melbourne. Lord Neil Silk.
Well, you'd better come and put it on then.
Ned winks at her. She walks out, shooting her husband an indignant look as she goes.
Joy, you should follow her. Make sure she doesn't signal from the windows with her bloomers or something.
Susan has stripped down to a long black lacy slip. She catches sight of Joe in a mirror on the wardrobe.
How dare you!
I sure am doing no harm.
He glances down at an ornamental pot containing an egg and a collection of skulls.
What are these? These skulls.
I collect them.
Hello.
He makes the skull talk.
So you're Joe Byrne. The papers say you have the facial features of a creature born to crime.
I'm the handsome one of the bunch.
They also said you married a Spanish housemaid in Deniliquin with the exotic name of Medilla.
We were just good friends.
I suppose you have a lot of good friends.
She looks away coyly and they sit down together on a chaise longue. He draws his pistol.
Sure there's no harm in being friendly.
His eyes roam over her body.
No. I don't suppose there is.
He strokes the skin of her arm.
Oh, you're a beast. An absolute beast.
She straddles him and they kiss. Downstairs...
She's taking an awfully long time.
He tried to get up on the horse. He just fell off the other side right into a puddle.
Oh, you'll never guess who I ran into last week.
Who?
Danny O'Reilly.
Yeah?
He's working on a new rail line to Wangaratta. He's got a wife and three kids.
Sure, that's grand. I haven't seen him in at least 3 years. That's like one kid every year.
Dan has a box of documents.
Hey, Ned. Look at this. Mortgages. One of them's for old man Wick's place. I recognise a couple of the others too.
They're of no use to you. They're the only records I have of the bank's debtors. Can I have them back, please?
No. No.
The documents are tossed onto a fire and are consumed by its flames.
So I killed their policeman and I robbed their bank. But burning their mortgages, well, that was destroying Crown property. It was like slapping Queen Victoria herself across the face. So they send in Hare, Superintendent Francis Hare, late of Cape Town, South Africa.
Hare emerges from a train.
And wasn't this the challenge of your whole life, Superintendent? A feather in your cap. You can't catch me. You don't have a hope of catching me. So you take my friends instead. Over 100 men arrested, stuck in stinking cells without trial, while their crops perish in the fields.
Policemen burst into a shack and pull the bedclothes off Aaron and a woman.
And guess what? Not one of them caves in and tries to claim the reward. Not one of them. They loved me just the same and hated you all the more, didn't they? Did you really think I was going to let them all rot?
Ned and Joe ride up to a farm.
£2,500. There's enough in there to pay the rent and the leaseholds for any of the lads left in jail. Thomas, you can take what you need for your mother to pay off her debt to McTeague.
Thanks, Ned.
And there's some for McKinley's and Bill Skillins, whatever he needs for his daughter.
Have you heard anything about me, Ma?
They sat a trial at the end of last month. She's been given 3 years hard labour. I'm sorry, Ned.
Geraldry Bank. Ned and Joe are packing bags full of money. Steve takes a watch from an old man.
I say, give me that back. That blackguard just stole my watch.
They say the Lord helps those who help themselves.
Give him back his watch.
What?
You heard what I said. I said, give him back his damn watch.
Have you gone simple all of a sudden? We're robbing the bank.
Listen here, kid. This is the last time I tell you, give him back his damn watch.
Ned lets go of Steve, who, rifle in hand, saunters back to the old man.
You're not innocent men. You're a bunch of common criminals.
Now, did you hear that? If we act like common thieves, that's just what they'll call us.
Ned puts his hands to his head. He slides over the bank's counter.
My mother is rotting away in a prison cell because of the lies of a policeman named Fitzpatrick. She's an innocent woman, and so are these boys here. My Irish brethren have been unlawfully imprisoned and blacklisted from their selections. How do you expect me to behave other than to stand up against this treatment? Any one of you here can take a shot at me and not be charged for it. There's my gun. Any of you feeling brave enough, go ahead.
The old man glares.
No. That's what I thought.
He picks his gun back up.
So if I can beg your patience, this is my statement to the Premier of Victoria, Graham Berry. And you here are my witnesses. Joe, take out a pen and paper. We'll write ourselves a letter.
Superintendent Hare leads two officers up the stairs of a grand Victorian building.
Dear sir.
Ned watches as Joe writes.
Dear sir.
Dear sir. I wish to acquaint you with some of the occurrences of the present, past, and future. It will pay government to give those people who are suffering
justice and liberty.
As justice and liberty. I seek revenge for the evil name given me and my relations. By the light that shines, this is my warning.
My brother and sisters and mother have to put up with the brutal and cowardly conduct of a parcel of
Big, ugly,
fat-necked.
Wombat-headed.
Wombat-headed, big-bellied.
Magpie-leg.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Go write that down. Magpie-leg.
Narrow-hipped, splore-footed, sons of Irish bailiffs.
Or English landlords, better known as what? Victorian police.
This section here you might find less amusing, Superintendent.
Hare's sneer fades.
I give fair warning to all those who have reason to fear me not to attempt to reside in Victoria. Neglect this and abide by the consequences, which shall be worse than the rust in the wheat. I do not wish to give this order full force without timely warning, but I am a widow's son, outlawed. My orders must be obeyed.
Geraldry Main Street.
Hey! Oh, it's Ned Kelly! Look!
Ned. Oh my God!
It's Ned Kelly and Joe Byrne.
A pretty young woman runs up to them.
Can I get a kiss, Dan?
Dan eyes the crowd.
Of course you can.
He bends down from his horse to kiss her.
Dan, the ladies, man, eh?
A mustachioed man in the crowd.
Where will you go, Ned?
The country belongs to us. And we'll go wherever we like.
A heat haze ripples an image of the gang galloping across an expanse of grassland which is dotted with trees. Hare studies a photo of Ned and snorts to himself. Aaron's in a dark cell. A policeman opens the door to let Hare in. Aaron's face is battered and bruised. Hare sits beside him on his bunk. Aaron stares down at the floor, then slides a look at Hare, who lights a cigarette. Hare shakes out the match, drops it on the floor, and inhales deeply. Aaron looks down at the floor again.
I hear you're planning on getting married, starting a family. Well, I'll tell you this, lad. Your lack of cooperation will make it very hard for me to get you out of here and back to that girl of yours.
I got nothing to tell you.
And I don't need to tell you about the reward, Aaron. It's a lot of money. You could put it to good use.
Hare, not looking at Aaron, stares ahead and draws on his cigarette.
You're a friend of Joseph Byrne, aren't you? You've known each other since childhood. Served time together, am I right?
Aaron sneers and looks away.
Aaron, it's the Kellys we want. We don't care about Joe. But if we let this run its course, he'll be shot down like the others. The only chance your friend will have depends on you. And if you help me with this, I'll guarantee his safety.
Aaron looks at Hare out of the corner of his eye and considers grimly. Night. Police set fire to bush with blazing torches. The bone-dry timber and foliage shoots up in fierce golden flames. Dan draws back a curtain across the gang's hide.
Ned!
Ned and the others join Dan and look out of the hide. A wall of smoke and fire faces the gang on a slope above their camp.
Jesus Christ. Come on.
They all rush to their horses and mount them.
Let's go.
The gang gallop down a clearing between blazing trees. The horses and their riders are silhouetted in the light from the roaring flames, which have spread throughout the bush. Day. Traces of smoke drift around charred, spindly trees as police pick their way through the remains of the gang's camp, where small pockets of fire still burn. Hare, wearing his kepi uniform cap and jacket with braided epaulettes and gold buttons, stands in the gloomy light. His expression is grim and pensive. An officer approaches him.
Sir.
Hare turns to the officer, who hands him the sergeant's watch. Hare turns the watch slowly between his gloved fingers as he studies it, then stares ahead darkly. In a narrow, smoky gully, Ned turns sharply when he hears a horse stir. Occasional sparks and flames flare from the tangle of scorched black trees which sizzle and smoke. Police on horseback file along a track through the charred remains. A dead boar lies beside a pool in the gully. Crouched beside the pool, Joe throws a stone into the water. Ned is crouched beside him. Both stare down at the water despondently.
They've poisoned it.
Ned hangs his head. A snake slithers through blackened remains on the ground.
Lying low, living in caves, you get to learn some things. Eventually, you can read soils and rocks like books.
A vulture stands over the carcass of an animal and tears at the flesh. Up in the skeletal remains of a tree, a lizard clings to a branch. Mounted on their horses, the gang ride slowly through the gloomy light of the burnt-out bush.
I've watched gravel fade. Dust settle into crust. I've seen drips of water turn to stone that defied gravity.
Police riders in silhouette against a silver-grey sky canter along a ridge.
I've turned blood red with cave mud.
The silhouettes of the gang on their horses pick their way slowly through the stark, petrified bush which becomes more sparse. A fierce, glowing sun beats down on the gang as they shelter amongst rocks. The men's faces are soot-covered and their expressions weary as they slump back against the grey stone.
I've been a bloody rock.
A horse's eye, its hoof paws the ground. Night. Ned raises the narrow blade of a long knife and studies it. He rises slowly, his eyes set on a target ahead, knife in his right hand. Ned approaches a horse slowly. He carefully reaches his knife hand under the horse's throat and with closed eyes leans his head against the animal's neck. Wearing an anguished expression, Ned slits the horse's throat. The beast's legs crumple beneath it, and it slowly sinks to the ground. In the darkness, Ned and Joe lean over the horse and drink the animal's blood from their cupped hands. Face and hands covered in blood, Ned sits solemnly beside the dead horse in the darkness. Day, at the cook's, Julia and her maid are tending a flower bed planted round a tree. Hearing horses approaching, Julia turns and sees the gang. Dan is sharing Ned's horse and Steve, Joe's horse. The men look exhausted. Julia's face brightens. They draw to a halt on a grassy slope, but Ned stares down at Julia. In a stable yard, Steve pumps water into a bucket, then pours it over Dan. Both men are in their long johns. Joe puffs a cigarette as he takes a bath. The maid walks in on him.
Sorry.
Dunjan.
Wait, please. The maid turns back to him.
Where?
Can you help to scrub my back? Joe holds up a sponge. I can't reach. The maid smiles bashfully.
Where's your husband?
Out looking for you, like the rest of the country.
Julia's cutting Ned's washed hair on the house porch.
You took a risk coming here.
She's standing behind Ned.
What am I in so?
Looking uneasy, Julia combs the back of Ned's hair and begins to cut it again.
You think God will forgive us for what we've done, Ned?
I don't know.
Ned and Dan are sitting on the lawn.
I suppose we're all going to find out one day.
I'm just thinking of my rotting away in that cell.
Dan, whose temple is grazed, stares into the distance.
Where do you think dies? Heaven or hell?
Dan turns to look at a newly coiffured Ned.
Nah, he wouldn't be in hell, you know. He wasn't such a bad fellow, he... He was just a dumb paddy who got picked on his whole life.
Dan nods.
And that does something to your pride, you know.
Can't even picture him.
When I was 10, and they gave me that green and gold sash for saving that kid from drowning. Well, that was the last time I remember him.
The brothers look at each other intensely.
He was proud of me that day.
We're gonna be okay, Ned.
Of course we are, you little gummy.
Ned gives Dan an encouraging nudge with his elbow. Ned saddles up a grey horse in the stable. He sees Julia watching him from the doorway. She walks over to him and leans her arms on the stall partition behind him.
You're just going to keep running, aren't you? They'll catch you eventually. I'll shoot you down.
He glowers at her over his shoulder, then moves to the other side of the horse.
Did you know they pardoned Frank Gardner in New South Wales? On condition he left the colony. He gave himself in.
He wasn't an Irishman.
Then why don't you just leave the county now? Try for a new life somewhere in Queensland.
No, I can't. It's not about me. You know, there's more to it than that.
He pulls a stirrup down into place.
What would it take to make you save yourself, Ned? My husband's best stallion? Take it. It's yours. Forget the mares.
More than that. Much more.
What then?
A red one too would be nice. With you atop of it, beside me.
He stares at her intently over the saddle.
For that, you'd save yourself. Leave your friends behind.
And you, your children.
Julia's eyes widen. She stares at him uneasily, then turns to walk away.
Look.
He sighs deeply and follows her.
You and me had no business with one another in the first place, did we? Wasn't that the whole point of it?
Tears well in Julia's eyes as Ned stares at her with a hint of resentment. She gazes back at him wistfully and gulps. Relenting, Ned looks down at her adoringly, cups her face in his hands, kisses her, then steps back. Julia lowers her eyes briefly and tries to maintain her composure.
Don't make me grieve for you.
Well, I ain't dead yet.
At the Kellys, Kate and Ma sit in front of the fire. Rebel's ears prick on hearing a noise and he rushes off. Kate opens the house door and looks out.
Rebel!
She scans the darkness edgily.
Kate!
Oh,
sorry, sir!
Oh, you bloody swine!
No, come here!
Oh, my...
Now, Gracie, look at you. You've grown too much. Can I come? Come on. Come on.
Ned and the gang go inside. Joe kisses Maggie in the back room of a pub.
So, is that rascal, Aaron Sherritt, the other night?
Oh, yeah? And what did you give him?
Nothing, you little scoundrel. See, so I'm talking to this fella. Friendly, like on the way out. Then the fella comes back here and starts asking me all sorts of questions about you.
Such as?
When did I see you last? And where you are now? That sort of thing.
Was he a cop, do you think?
I don't know. It could mean nothing. I just thought you had no like.
Thanks, Maggie.
Joe kisses Maggie and hugs her to him tenderly. Aaron finishes having a pee outside the pub. Joe stands in the shadows round a corner of the building and calls to him.
Hello, Aaron.
Aaron turns to him sharply.
Joe?
Ned appears.
Ned.
So how's things, Aaron?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I've been reading a lot about you, Ned. You're a real terror altogether, aren't you? We've been meaning to talk to you, Aaron. We were wondering if you'd consider acting as a scout for us. We're heading into Beechworth to rob a bank there. A scout? Well, I'm flattered you'd think of me that, but... You're not interested? No, I'd love to. It always just looked to me I'd be in there like a shot, you know that. I've got the missus to think about now. Because between you and me, lass, she's up to spout. Ah, she isn't. Ah, sure, that's great.
Congratulations, crap. Yeah.
Thanks. How are Dan and Steve?
They're fine.
Say hello to them for me, will you?
I will.
Well, I'd best get back to the party. Mary will be wondering where I get to. Sure. You go on and look after that girl, have you?
Joe hugs Aaron.
I will indeed.
Ned then hugs Aaron.
Yeah. Sorry I can't help you out. Good luck with it all, anyways.
Joe nods. Aaron gives them a forced matey wink. Joe and Ned watch him hurry off. Live music in the pub.
I am a native of Aaron's Island, transported now from my native shore. They tore me from my aged parents and from the maiden whom I adore. I've been a prisoner at Port Macquarie, at Norfolk Island and Dingy Plains.
Aaron sits at a table in shadowy light, staring ahead pensively as the trio perform.
Settlements, I've worked in chains, but of all places of condemnation.
Day. Ned and Joe are sitting on their horses on top of a hill overlooking the town of Beechworth. A huge posse of police on horseback gallops along the road into town, kicking up clouds of dust as they travel. Joe watches and shakes his head dejectedly.
Aaron, what are you doing?
Night. At the Kellys, Dan and Steve take the fireplace apart while Kate and Ned watch.
Some coppers and horses followed me until Wangaratta, but I met up with Tom Lloyd and Bill and we gave him the slip easy as he please.
That's great.
Here we go.
Dan and Steve heave a trunk onto the table. Dan lifts the lid back. The trunk is full of guns.
That's great, Katie.
Yeah, well, I wish I'd never bloody bothered. You're all going to get yourselves killed.
We are not.
You bloody well are.
No, we're not, Katie. We're going to give them a show like they've never seen before.
The weaponry lies on the table, some of it unassembled.
There's a certain type of black tribesman that bends in the wind.
The gang prepare the guns.
Blends into the background.
Ned moves a long rod in and out of the barrel of a rifle.
Mostly he employs the help of the dead to destroy other people.
Ned finishes preparing the rifle and studies it.
A night dancer, they call him.
Ned aims the rifle and pulls the trigger. Aaron's hut stands in darkness. Inside, he plays cards with three policemen.
Who's in?
A distracted-looking Aaron checks his cards.
Foul. I'm turning in.
I guess all that losing would make you tired.
Aaron gets up.
You're in or you're out?
Let me three.
Using a candle to light his way, Aaron goes into his bedroom. Mary lies in bed with her eyes closed. Sighing, Aaron sits on the bed.
What's happening?
Go back to sleep, love.
He removes his waistcoat.
Straight to the English Queen.
It's blessed Jeremiah.
The officers turn sharply, hearing the call. Aaron stiffens. Nigel cocks his rifle. Another officer goes to a window. Rifle in hand, the bearded officer peers out of the window and sees a female figure standing a little way off in the shadows. Aaron comes out of his bedroom.
Who's that? Who is it?
Another one of your whores, it looks like. Just tell her to get lost, unless she wants her head blown off.
Aaron glances back at a sleeping Mary, closes the bedroom door and creeps out onto the porch. Aaron walks slowly towards the figure.
Lizzie, is that you?
Aaron stops in his tracks and stares. The female figure is revealed to be Joe, who cocks his rifle and aims. The shot blasts Aaron, who drops to the ground. Ned gallops through the night on his grey horse. Joe, minus his female garb, rides beside him. They slow and pull their horses up. Ned appears to be carrying a rifle wrapped in a cloth. Joe turns to him sadly.
Why do you think he did it? Just for the money?
Maybe he started thinking he was some kind of big shot. Instead of a shit-kicker's son like us.
Ned, whose dark beard is full and bushy, lowers his eyes pensively, then rides on. A waiting train steams as Hare, standing on a podium, addresses a large group of constables on a station platform.
We have received word that one of our informants has been shot dead by the Kelly gang over near Beechworth. We will entrain immediately and proceed to Wangaratta. From there, you'll be split up into units and will fan out across the country, encircling the immediate vicinity. Stay close to your troop commanders for your orders of march. I would remind you all, the men we are hunting have not only plundered two banks, kidnapped men, women and children, but have murdered three of your fellow officers. They have outrun us before, gentlemen. Do not allow them to do so again.
Don't you worry, sir. We'll show the bloody animals. We'll blow them all to kingdom come.
These are not animals, Constable. These are men who have been glorified as the leaders of a movement. A movement that threatens the stability of an entire country.
underestimate them, and it will be you who will be blown to Kingdom Come.
Out in the bush, the gang fire at makeshift armor. Dan inspects an armored breastplate which is resting against a tree stump. He checks the front and back of the armor, looks to the rest of the gang, and smiles.
They say the trouble with the Irish is that they rely too much on dreams and not enough on gunpowder. Whereas the English were shy on dreams as usual, but had plenty of the other.
The huge wagons of a travelling circus roll along a track. The gang ride towards them.
Now we had both.
Ned addresses a whiskery gent on the lead wagon.
I suppose you're the great Orlando.
I tell you I am.
Well, I'm the great Ned Kelly, and this here is the fabulous Joe Byrne. We'd like to join your circus.
Oh.
They aim their guns at Orlando, who has a monkey on his shoulder. At Glen Rowan Railway Station, Station Master Stanistreet smokes a pipe and reads a newspaper. He stops and stares when he sees a camel through his window. The one-humped camel stops and looks about as it chews. Bemused, Stanistreet gets up out of his chair and goes to his door to look out. An armed Ned and Joe greet him.
That's right, you're not seeing things, it's a camel. We've got a lion and some ponies back down the road. And the great Orlando, of course.
If you're here to rob the train, you're too late.
We're not here to rob the train.
Bolts are removed from the rails. Ned and Joe stand with Stanistreet watching two men tear up the track in sunshine. Dusk. Ned and Joe, on horseback, lead the circus into the small country town of Glen Rowan. The party draws to a halt outside a ramshackle inn. The owners, the Jones family, come out onto the porch to meet them. The father carries a white cockatoo on his shoulder. Ned gets off his horse, approaches the mother, daughter, father and son, and eyes them firmly as he issues instructions.
Joe, get this lot inside.
Inside the inn, Ned smooths back his thick brown hair and stands in front of a large group of people from the town and the circus. He surveys them. They stare back at him. Candles cast a shadowy light in the large room.
This good-looking fellow over here is my brother, Dan Kelly. These are my friends, Joe Byrne, at the bar there, and Steve Hart, up there in the back corner.
They look briefly to Steve, who holds a rifle with the muzzle in the air.
And I'm Ned. We're all Irish boys, and selectors' sons. Had war declared on us by Victoria, by New South Wales, by the Crown, and by the London Times even.
The audience are rapt.
The reward on our heads is the biggest one yet offered in the world. It's up to £8,000. It's a lot of money.
One woman looks impressed. Mrs. Jones listens attentively.
We're the only four lads in the whole country. The entire empire, in fact. That any one of you fine citizens is allowed to kill. No questions asked. No, it's true. The Queen said so herself.
The audience blink and stare at him. The Joneses' pretty, dark-eyed daughter looks saddened by Ned's words.
That's right. It's Regina versus us. The Kelly gang.
Ned pours a drink.
So our plans were set.
Sitting beside a fire in the inn, Ned sips the drink.
One, the traitor, Aaron Sherritt, dead, as arranged.
Aaron lies dead on his back outside his hut.
Two, the police special from Benalla coming to meet us. The line torn up to send the train to hell, as arranged. Three, Superintendent Hare, if he lives, easily worth an outlaw's mother. And four, the townspeople, out of harm's way, drinks on us, as arranged.
Joe dances with the Joneses' daughter. Mrs. Jones brings Dan food.
Here you go.
Oh, lamb, my favourite.
Ned pours a drink for a smartly dressed, sombre-faced man with red hair.
Now, cheer up there, Mr. Curnow. You're a witness to history. How many school teachers dream of that?
Curnow's eyes dart about uneasily. Night. Ned stands in shadowy moonlight on the porch of the inn.
Come on here, where the hell are you?
A lion paces in a cage. The police train's headlamps glow as it travels through the night. On board with his men, Hare walks down a corridor past compartments. Oil lamps provide a dim glow. The wheels roll over track. Ned sits on his bed. Ned cocks his pistol and aims. The Joneses' daughter enters with a tray. Ned lowers his gun.
Where are you sleeping?
She puts the tray down on a candle-lit cabinet and picks up a pistol she finds on the cabinet. She turns and dangles the pistol in Ned's direction.
You thinking of using that?
She aims it at him and smiles.
I'm mulling it over.
Right.
She lowers the pistol.
You don't remember me, do you?
She stands at the foot of the iron bedstead.
You were just a boy then. You were riding a Palomino mare with a white blaze.
Ned lapses into thought. A flashback to Ned riding on the mare with the young woman in the saddle behind him.
Jane. Yeah.
They beam at each other.
Seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Lifetime.
He stares ahead, still deep in thought. A young lad plays a squeeze box in the main room of the inn. Dan sits staring down at the floor. He looks up when Joe enters and saunters through the room full of subdued townspeople. Pistol tucked in his belt, Joe approaches Stanistreet.
Where's the other fellow?
Curnow, who was sitting with Stanistreet and another man, is no longer there. Stanistreet looks sheepish. The other man looks at Joe with a faintly defiant smile. Joe looks alarmed.
Where's Curnow?
Joe searches the inn frantically.
Ned, Curnow's gone.
The police train has stopped just before the torn-up track. Some of the police examine the damage, while the rest of the force disembark from the train into the wet night. The horses are offloaded down ramps. Standing in the cover of bushes, Ned watches Curnow talking to Hare beside the train. At the inn, Dan helps Steve on with armour and secures a strap. Joe hands Steve a pistol. Orlando watches and smiles.
Knights in shining armour!
Ned enters the inn. The circus people and townsfolk watch as he walks up somberly and faces Dan, Joe and Steve, who are all in body armour.
Colonel, stop the train.
Oh, Jesus. What does this mean?
Hare's on his way.
You mean we didn't get any of them?
Not a soul.
There'll be 100 of them. At least.
In pouring rain, hordes of armed police jog through mud to positions surrounding the inn. Some of the police lead horses by their reins. Ned watches a frightened-looking Dan who stares at the floor.
You okay, Dan?
Dan looks up.
Yeah, I'm okay, Ned.
Dan nods and breathes deeply.
Steve.
Short life. And a merry one.
Ned and Steve exchange brave smiles.
Well, we gotta give him a good old fight. Aren't we?
Ned doesn't look convinced.
What's that then?
Ned winks and smiles feebly.
All right, everyone listen to me. We're getting you out of here.
The police lie in wait in the torrential rain. A line of the officers is silhouetted as they rest their elbows on a fallen tree and take aim with their rifles.
Get those horses off!
hair stands in the shadows, his eyes fixed on the inn. An officer lights a flare which zooms into the sky and explodes, illuminating the ground and making the lion react. Masses of rifles are trained on the inn. Police wait, rifles poised. The townspeople start to leave the inn with their hands raised. An officer takes a firmer grip of his rifle as he aims.
It's a trick!
A line of townsfolk advance towards the waiting police. A policeman fires and his colleagues follow suit. Hare's orders are ignored.
Hold your fire! Cease fire!
Survivors return to the inn.
Down on the floor! Keep your heads down! Down on the floor!
They fired! They shot him!
Keep as low as you can, you hear? All right, let's give it to him. Hit the lights.
Ned, now wearing body armor, extinguishes an oil lamp nearby. Hare stares fixedly at the inn as the lights dim. Four silhouettes emerge from the inn and stand in the darkness. Hare sees them.
Fire!
The gang now wear bucket-shaped helmets over their heads with slits for the eyes. One of the gang is hit in the arm. Bullets smash the inn windows and people lie cowering on the floor. The police stop firing. The gang are still standing. As a man, the gang step forward and aim their weapons. Police are mown down, their bodies jolting with the impact of the bullets. The gang advance towards the police, firing. Hare aims, fires, and walks forwards, firing again. He's taken out.
He's been shot! They've shot Hare!
Police! Get back inside! Back inside, come on!
Hare is dragged away by his men. The gang retreat inside, remove their bucket helmets, and back up against the walls as they reload.
Dan! Reload your pistols! No! Go to the bastard! Give me that anyways! Rifle!
Dan throws Ned a rifle.
The bullets! Come on!
Bullets strafe bottles on a shelf. Ned stands to the side of a window as bullets ricochet off it and through it, blasting the interior of the inn to pieces. The gang stand or crouch by windows, darting out from cover to fire their shots, then retreating swiftly.
Ah, the monkey can be shot! Poor little bugger!
Oh, dear God!
Mrs. Jones finds Orlando covered in blood, his eyes closed. Another woman takes a bullet in the stomach and collapses. Mrs. Jones, her husband, and Jane drag screaming son Johnny behind the bar.
Can you find me something to stop the bleeding?
Mr. Jones is hit.
Down with all you bastards!
The lion paces ever more restlessly in its cage. Ned stands trembling at the side of a window and stares down at the mass of townspeople and circus folk who lie dead or injured on the inn floor. Dan fires a shot through a window. Ned stares grimly at the carnage in the inn. Joe fires a shot, then spots Ned walking out.
Ned! Where the hell are you going? Get this lad around the back!
Ned dons his long bucket helmet, which extends to cover the gap between his breastplate and chin. Dan watches, panting heavily. Ned looks at Dan, then turns away swiftly and heads outside. The remaining police lie in wait. Ned walks forward to the police line, firing a pistol. Ned draws the police fire.
Now it's a chance! Quickly! Out that back door!
The townsfolk scramble out. Ned's hit but returns fire. He's hit again. Ned staggers but continues to walk forward, firing. He takes out a policeman. Ned lurches forward, a pistol in each hand. The townsfolk file out of the back of the inn.
Hands up the lawyer, or you'll be shot down like dogs!
Don't shoot! The lawyer!
A policeman fires.
I got him! I got Dan Kelly!
Now you bloody what happens?
Dan shoots the policeman. Joe sits panting. Joe looks around at the bloodied bodies which are strewn about the room.
Jesus Christ, lads. I think I need a drink.
Joe gets up off the floor and picks his way through bodies to the bar. Joe seizes a bottle which has remained intact on the bar and pours himself a drink in a glass which has also survived. He picks up the glass, but a bullet smashes it to smithereens in his hand. Joe laughs. A bullet penetrates Joe's armour. He puts a hand to his armour, which gushes blood. Dan watches as Joe's eyes glaze over, and he sinks to the floor. Joe lies on his back with his eyes open. A shocked Dan and Steve share an alarmed look. Outside, the lion lies dead in its cage. Ned, barely standing, staggers along and sees the camel through the eye slit in his helmet.
What I best recall is riding alone with the sun behind me. Seeing me own shadow cantering ahead against the roadside, weeds and willows.
Ned drops to his knees.
Leaving me stretched far behind, galloping to chase it. Like a centaur in the picture books.
Ned hangs his head and slumps forward slightly. After a moment, he slumps to his side and rolls onto his back. Ned's eyes close. Images of Ned rescuing Dick Shelton. Bubbles emanate from the boy's mouths as Ned drags the boy up through the water. Ned is a short-haired, well-scrubbed young lad standing in sunlight. His parents look on proudly as Ned is honoured with a green and gold sash for his bravery. A woman in a bonnet ceremoniously hands the folded sash to a man in a top hat. The man then ties the sash round Ned's waist and shakes Ned's hand.
Well done, Ned.
Ned's father lays a hand on his son's shoulder.
I wore it seriously. Me hero's sash of green and gold.
Beneath blue skies, Ned's father smiles down at him.
Proof that I've saved a life as well.
The injured Ned's eyes open. Pressing his bearded chin into his chest, he looks about a little, then struggles to his feet, using the thick branch of a felled tree to help heave himself up. Leaning on the branch for support, he turns and sees police standing outside the inn. Unaware of him, they watch the fierce flames. His hair spiky and dishevelled, Ned stares grimly at the blazing inn. Dan and Steve sit on the floor inside the inn.
Am I around?
Smoke surrounds them.
Do you have any left?
Dan checks his pistol.
Only two.
I guess that's all we need then, isn't it?
Dan turns sharply to Steve.
Never stood a chance, did we?
The young men's faces crumple as they weep. Steve takes Dan's pistol and cocks it. He and Dan hold hands. Steve puts the barrel of the pistol to his own temple. Flames swirl. Dan hugs Steve.
No!
Steve lies limply against him. With his arm still around his friend, Dan takes the pistol, cocks it, and flinches as he puts the barrel to his temple. Dan clenches his teeth. Outside, Ned, who's kneeling on the ground, hears the shots. His long, dishevelled hair, overgrown beard and dirty face give him the appearance of a caveman as he stares down at the ground. Turning slightly and with difficulty, Ned reaches behind him for his helmet and struggles to lift it the couple of feet or so up to the branch he uses for support. Ned lays the helmet down on the branch with the bottom facing him. He leans forward, sticks his head in the helmet, then sits up. Ned slowly and unsteadily gets to his feet. Carrying a pistol in each hand, Ned lurches forward and fires a shot in the air. Aware of him now, the remaining police turn on him. Ned falls to the ground. Lying on his side, Ned removes his helmet. One of his pistols lies in front of him. The police shuffle hurriedly but stealthily towards Ned, their rifles trained on him.
It's Ned Kelly. Christ almighty, it's Ned Kelly.
Jane runs up and breaks through the line of police. She looks down at a battered Ned. Battling for breath, he rolls onto his back and looks at her out of the corner of his eye. Jane stares down at him sadly. Later on the police train, Ned lies in a rail carriage with barred windows. Lying on his back, he stares upwards as a doctor undoes his waistcoat. The doctor draws back Ned's garment to reveal Ned's green and gold sash tied around his waist. The doctor's hands are bloody from tending Ned's wounds. The doctor, who has a neat grey beard and sculpted moustache, unties the sash and pulls it from around Ned's waist. Hare enters the carriage. His left arm is in a sling and his white shirt bloodied. The police guarding Ned step back respectfully as Hare walks up and stands at his side. Hare stares down at Ned with an almost gentle expression. Ned, who has blood caked beneath his nostrils, returns his gaze. Hare turns to the doctor and takes the bloodied sash from him. He studies it, then looks to Ned.
Do you mind if I have this?
Ned cocks his head slightly and looks up at Hare with a puzzled frown. Hare stares back at him impassively. Ned lies drowsily in his carriage. He turns his head to look out of the bars and sees three little boys staring at him. The boys wave and jump up and down. St- steam drifts past the bars of Ned's carriage as the train pulls away.
Such is life.
Despite petitions for a pardon that bore a total of 32,000 signatures, Ned Kelly was hanged on the 11th of November, 1880. He was 25 years old. ITFC audio description.
At the end of my days, when I'm called to go into the open arms of the Holy Ghost, to have lived such a life as I have known. Fortune followed me, but I'm brave no more. For my grave mistakes, I will surely pay. I'm running low, and the devil is on my trail. When fate delivers me, all I'll ask it for is a place to rest and shelter for my soul. Oh, if I could spend my days free from the prison of your gaze, then I could die happy man. Oh, if I could spend my days free from the shadow of my name, then I could die a happy man. This morning.